Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Collins Foods FY 2021 results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Drew O'Malley, Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Good. Thanks, Ashley. Good morning, everyone. This is Drew O'Malley speaking, and with me on the call, I have Nigel Williams, our Group CFO. I'm very pleased to be able to take you through the results for Collins Foods Limited for the full year, which was the 52-week period to the 2nd of May 2021. As a note, we will reference underlying results excluding the impact of AASB 16, the accounting standard on leasing, unless otherwise stated. The full-year results for Collins Foods show record revenue and earnings despite COVID-19. There were several key financial highlights from continuing operations on an underlying basis. Notably, revenue was up 12.4% to 1,065.9 million, driven by an exceptional performance from KFC Australia. EBITDA was also up 12.4% to 136.3 million, with improvements in Australia offsetting tougher margins in Europe. Underlying NPAT was 56.9 million, up 18.3% on prior year. Continuing operations do exclude Sizzler Australia, which was closed on the 15th of November 2020. During the year, there were also a number of non-trading items, which are outlined in more detail on page 30 of the presentation and had a 6.4 million dollar impact on statutory NPAT from continuing operations. Additionally, net operating cash flow was 95.9 million, a very similar number to prior year, enabling net debt to come down to 177.4 million and the net leverage to reduce to 1.33 from 1.69 in the prior year, leaving us with a very strong balance sheet. Underlying basic earnings per share for continuing operations was 0.489, up 18.4% from 0.413 per share in prior year. A fully franked final dividend of 0.125 per share has been declared, bringing the full-year fully franked dividend to 0.23 per share. Moving to the strategic highlights for the year on slide two. Overall, despite an often turbulent environment, in FY 2021, we made excellent progress on our strategy to build and grow the world-class brands that we operate, with the overall results underscoring the strength of our business model. The KFC Australia division delivered an impressive same-store sales growth of 12.9% and achieved a record EBITDA margin of 17.9%. The foundation for these results remains the extraordinary health of the brand here in Australia, together with the continued successful expansion of delivery and digital initiatives. In KFC Europe, the last 12 months have been very challenging, almost entirely due to the impact of the various restrictions and lockdowns that have applied in Europe for most of the year. Our team has done an admirable job managing through this turbulence. Nonetheless, we have managed to leverage weakness in the landscape to extend our development agreement and acquire three smaller franchisees on favorable terms. Taco Bell Australia delivered 57% sales growth as a result of 3.9% same-store sales growth and the opening of four new restaurants to take the total to 16. Whilst there is still much to do, we are pleased with the improvements we have seen during the last year and are looking to accelerate the rate of new restaurant openings during the next 12 months. Overall, FY 2021 has been our strongest year yet for organic restaurant development, a real accomplishment in a year beset with COVID-19 related delays. Our final tally included 18 new restaurants across the business, consisting of 11 in KFC Australia, four in Taco Bell, and three in KFC Europe. With further reduced net debt and a low net leverage ratio, our strong balance sheet affords capacity to continue to grow strongly and take advantage of further expansion opportunities as and when they become available. Turning now to KFC Australia in more depth. In terms of overall performance, our largest business unit delivered a record year of same-store sales and margins. Total revenue was up 13.8% to $900.4 million, inclusive of 12.9% same-store sales growth, noting that the 13.4% same-store sales growth in the second half of the year does include rolling over COVID-related negative indexes in late FY20. Underlying EBITDA grew by 21.6% to $161.4 million, with a full-year EBITDA margin of 17.9%, reflecting strong flow-through from same-store sales. As noted, we also opened 11 new restaurants in the year and are now offering delivery services at over 200 of our restaurant locations. Moving to slide 5 in the deck, the KFC brand continues to show its strength across a range of metrics. One of the most significant indicators of this is the year-on-year increase of 5% in traffic for KFC during calendar Q1 of this year versus a decline of 4% in traffic for the overall QSR category. This highlights the extraordinary levels of trust and top-of-mind awareness that consumers have for the KFC brand right now, supporting long-term sales growth. The e-commerce sales channels continue to expand, with delivery sales double their prior year level. In addition, following a successful trial, we are expanding our delivery as a service platform, a service where the customer comes to the KFC app or website, and the aggregator just manages the back-end delivery. This has the benefits of bringing more customers directly into our digital ecosystem, allowing us to understand their behavior better, be more precise with our marketing, and better manage the experience. As a note, due to accounting rules, we will be grossing up the delivery fee onto the sales line for this channel and also including it in costs, which while not impacting dollar profit, will slightly impact margins over time as this channel grows. Total e-commerce sales channels, including delivery, web, and app, now account for over 14% of total sales. Our digital efforts are broad in scope and expand beyond delivery, with initiatives to upgrade customer-facing touchpoints, such as digital menu boards in our drive-thrus and in-store kiosks, as well as back-of-house operational initiatives to support improved rostering and production planning. As a company focused on operational excellence, we've been pleased to see these and other non-digital initiatives leading to steady increases in guest satisfaction. Moving to slide 6, our network development program has accelerated despite COVID-19 related delays. 11 new restaurants were built and opened during the year, and 42 remodels were completed across the network for a capital spend of $18.3 million. Overall, the new restaurants are performing very well, at or above hurdle rates. We are targeting to build an additional 9 to 12 new restaurants in FY22, and we are now operating under a new development agreement to build a minimum 66 new restaurants by 2028, inclusive of stores opened in 2020. Digital-related CapEx investments will continue in FY22, with an additional 60 digital menu boards on drive-thrus toward an accelerated goal of converting the entire portfolio within 3 years. 30 to 50 kiosk locations will be introduced in FY22, and we will continue digital investments in back-of-house operations. I will now turn to our European business, slide 8 of the presentation, if you have it in front of you. As mentioned earlier, Europe was a far more challenging environment than Australia, with COVID-19 lockdowns and restrictions in place for a large part of the year. While revenue was up slightly, growing 0.6% to $134.9 million, same-store sales declined 0.6%. This included a 3.3% same-store sales decline in the Netherlands, which was heavily impacted by an over 50% decline in our Damrak flagship store in the Amsterdam Tourist Center. Excluding Damrak, same-store sales across both countries would have been a positive 4.6%. In Germany, where less of our sales come from inline restaurants, same-store sales grew 4.2% due to more aggressive value-based promotions. Overall, EBITDA was $1.1 million, with the EBITDA margin contracting to 0.8%. This reflected the lower sales in the Netherlands, a shift to less profitable channels, and a disproportionate impact from the lost sales in Damrak. Non-trading items totaling $4.6 million at the EBIT level include a provision for two restaurant closures in Germany and the impairment of one shopping mall location in the Netherlands. These measures will help to support future profitability in the region. Moving to slide 9, with FY21 behind us, we do believe KFC Europe is well positioned for recovery as restrictions ease. Strong underlying local demand was evident in the FY21 drive-through performance, with 12.6% drive-through positive same-store sales growth in Germany and 9.5% growth in the Netherlands. Germany in particular noted consistent same-store sales during the financial year, thanks in part to aggressive value promotions. Just prior to year-end, coinciding with the beginning of easing of restrictions in Europe, sales trends in both countries have improved. Whilst this is very encouraging overall, it should be noted that certain stores, including Damrak, will likely continue to lag until tourism levels return to pre-COVID levels. Setting aside the possibility of additional outbreaks in the region, we believe that under the new leadership of Hans Miette, the business is in a good position to recover financial performance in the years ahead. And moving to slide 10, despite a turbulent year in Europe, development has continued in the Netherlands, where three new sites were opened and a new development agreement was signed with Yum. The agreement runs until 2025 and includes build targets of 2 to 4 per year, with significant incentives for achieving and exceeding targets and no penalties for falling short. The expected development pace for the Netherlands in FY22 will be consistent with the development agreement targets. Given that the Netherlands business fundamentals are slightly stronger than Germany and the market is closer to scale relative to the population size, the focus of our European development efforts will stay in the Netherlands and our approach to deployment of capital will remain selective in Germany in the near term. And on to slide 11. Notwithstanding the challenging trading environment, we have taken the opportunity to further consolidate the KFC market in the Netherlands by entering into deals that enable us to acquire an additional 8 net new restaurants purchased from 3 different franchisees for total consideration of 10.8 million euros. The acquisitions provide 1.9 million euros of EBITDA on a 2019 pre-COVID basis. Not only are these restaurants immediately accretive, they also take our Netherlands share to 44%, with Collins Foods now owning 34 of the 78 restaurants in the Netherlands. These acquisitions have multiple strategic benefits as well. They increase our scale in the market, they enhance our influence on the direction of the market with the franchisor, and as you can see on the map, on the right-hand side of the slide, the acquisitions extend our geographic presence, providing further development opportunities going forward. Outside of Collins, the franchisee network remains relatively fragmented, and we believe additional acquisition opportunities are possible. Moving on to slide 13, in our Taco Bell business in Australia, we have seen improvement, though we are still in the early stages of the development of the brand. Revenue was up 57% to $28 million, reflecting sales from 4 new restaurants opened in FY21, the full year effect of FY20 openings, and same-store sales growth of 3.9%, which is measured on a small base of just 7 restaurants which have been open for a minimum of 18 months. EBITDA at store level was $1.4 million, up from $0.6 million in the prior comparison period. Store-level EBITDA excludes new store opening costs and brand G&A. Underlying EBITDA includes these costs, including these costs, was a loss of $1.6 million, nonetheless an improvement from the $2.6 million loss in FY20. The $2.2 million in non-trading items represent the impairment of 2 former Sizzler locations, which are performing below expectations. Both do remain open in expectation of future profitability as the brand gains scale. Turning to slide 14, the Taco Bell marketing strategy is focused on driving awareness and trial, necessary for brands in the early stages of their life cycle. The particular focus is to reinforce the QSR credentials of the brand and emphasize core products and everyday value. At the same time, we are boosting the out-of-home and digital elements of our media strategy, such as focusing more on billboards near to our restaurants and less on general media like radio. Delivery is also a growing category in Taco Bell, currently at 15% of sales, and as in KFC, likely to play a key role in the brand's future. Moving to slide 15, development for Taco Bell resumed in the second half of the year with 4 new restaurants opened, taking the total restaurant count to 16, including 12 in Queensland and 4 in Victoria. We continue to make steady improvements in the design with typical restaurant build costs now trending towards $1 million. We are on track to reaccelerate the rollout in FY22 with an expected 9 to 12 new restaurant openings this year. Our development strategy is to build out clusters in tightly concentrated areas in Queensland and Victoria with a targeted suburban focus, and our first restaurant opening in Perth is expected in late 2021. Overall, the opportunity remains to get to scale within 3 to 5 years, and we are confident in the success of the brand. On slide 17, Sizzler Asia faced unprecedented trading conditions with COVID-19 dining restrictions in Thailand and Japan having a significant impact on royalty revenues, as you can see in the table. The business does nonetheless remain profitable and will continue to be operated as usual. I will now hand over to Nigel to take you through our financials in more detail.
Thank you, Drew. Starting on slide 19, I will continue to talk through the results on a pre-AASB 16 basis, but it's worth noting that there is no impact to overall net cash flow from the leasing standard. It's merely a reallocation of leases from operating cash flow to financing activities. With that said, I am pleased to report another strong year of cash generation. Net operating cash flow of $95.9 million was down slightly on FY20 due to the reversal of some of the working capital timing benefit received in FY20 and higher instalment payments for income tax. Net cash outflow from investing activities was $50.9 million. This included capital spend of $41.9 million, reflecting further investment in new restaurants and the existing network. New store and remodel capex totaled $27.3 million, while sustaining and other capital spend was $14.7 million. Given 3 of the new KFC Australia restaurants were opened very late in April 2021, the capex spend on those 3 restaurants will appear in FY22. The strong cash flow generation has again enabled the payment of the growing dividend, all growth and sustaining capital, the acquisitions in Europe, and repayment of some debt. Turning to the balance sheet on slide 20, the cash balance of $95.7 million has reduced with the repayment of previously drawn debt. Importantly, net debt is down to $175.8 million, leaving the balance sheet in a strong position to support growth initiatives. Property, plant and equipment is up $1.4 million to $188.9 million, reflecting ongoing investment in new and remodeled stores, partially offset by depreciation. Pre-leasing standard net assets are up $16.4 million to $390.1 million. Funding capacity is further highlighted on the next slide, with the growth in EBITDA and reduction in net debt leading to a net leverage ratio of 1.33, down from 1.69 at this time last year, providing significant headroom to the covenant maximum of 2.75. With net debt at $177.4 million, there is significant room to our current facility of approximately $400 million. I'll now hand you back to Drew to talk through sustainability and priorities for FY22.
Thanks, Nigel. On slide 23, we are pleased to present our new ESG strategy. Whilst we have operated various sustainability practices for many years, we now have a clear framework to demonstrate our ESG credentials, and we're very proud to make significant commitments in 3 main areas: people and communities, planet, and governance. With respect to people and communities, Our primary goal is to establish Collins Foods Giving as a best-in-class signature program with 75% enrollment by 2026, up from 30% today. Collins Foods Giving offers our employees the opportunity to give back to Australians in need through a weekly donation from pre-tax salary to a charity of their choice. Demonstrating the company's commitment to the program, we match donations up to $150,000 each year. Regarding our planet commitments, our primary goals are to reduce our carbon footprint by achieving a 25% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2026 and to increase the diversion of waste from landfill by 25% also by 2026. Regarding governance, we are committed to continuous improvement and best practice governance standards in all of our business activities. Further details on our ESG initiatives and commitments will be detailed in our upcoming sustainability report, which will be published in July. And lastly, moving to slide 25 to share our priorities for FY22 to drive future growth. In KFC Australia, we expect to maintain positive same-store sales growth and stable margins while leveraging technology to take customer and employee experience to new levels. For KFC Europe, we are focused on recovering financial performance toward pre-COVID levels as restrictions ease. We will also look to continue to expand our presence via acquisition and organic growth, primarily in the Netherlands. And in Taco Bell, we will continue to capitalize on the growing Mexican segment in Australia by driving awareness and trial for the brand and re-accelerating new store openings to build scale. At a group level, we are launching ESG initiatives to achieve our stated long-term ESG targets, and we are increasing our group organic development rate to 20 to 28 restaurants in FY22, including 9 to 12 in KFC Australia, a similar amount in Taco Bell, and 2 to 4 new restaurants in KFC Netherlands. That concludes the formal presentation. I would now like to open the call for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Tim Plume with UBS. Please go ahead. Tim Plume, your line is now live. Please proceed with your question. Your next question comes from Joe Little with Morgans. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi Joe. Good morning.
Yeah, morning guys. Thanks for your time. Just firstly, I guess on KFC Australia, you're obviously quite confident the last result and your ability to positively cycle these with pretty high comps, and today you're targeting growth, which would be a fantastic outcome. Just interested in a bit of context here around that confidence and how you think you can get there. I guess it's around, you know, promotions, you know, digital, etc., but just some extra context. And I know you haven't given a trading update, but clearly you're going to get asked it. So to the extent you're willing to give anything around that. Thank you.
Yeah, happy to do that. Thanks, Joe. Look, starting with KFC Australia, the first 6-7 weeks of trading, we are at a positive 1.5% in KFC Australia. Obviously, you know, FY20 represented about 3 to 4 years of typical same-store sales growth in one, so we're pleased to lap those numbers in positive territory, which has been our ambition. They are challenging numbers to roll. We're certainly very conscious of that. I think what gives us confidence to stay in positive territory is, I think between delivery, number one, the strength of the retail calendar, which I think is excellent, and just the overall brand strength, you know, we're certainly optimistic. It doesn't make it easy to lap these numbers, but I think those are the things that fuel our confidence for Australia. I might take the opportunity to share some of the initial 7 weeks for the other brands. We only issued the trading update, I think, last year as a release, given the uncertainty of COVID. We look at things now being a bit more of a business as usual. But let's talk about KFC Europe. First 7 weeks is actually at a plus 21.3% same-store sales, and that includes nearly 30% same-store sales in Netherlands Now, obviously, we're lapping some pretty low numbers from last year. I think what gives us confidence is that we're up a plus 5.5% on a two-year roll, which is encouraging for us. So those numbers have settled a bit in the later part of the seven-week period, but it's been a good start to the year, and it does fuel our confidence in the recovery in the region. Lastly, for Taco Bell, for 7 weeks is a minus 14%. That's obviously had quite a bit of impact from the Melbourne lockdown. There's also some promotional timing issues that are involved there. A bit of a disappointing start given the strong second half of the year we had in Taco Bell. But we would note it is on a small base of 7 stores, and we do expect those numbers to improve. That's a bit of a around the horn on where we are on trading since the end of the financial year. So let me turn it back for more questions.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Ferrier with Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Hi, Drew and Nigel. Thanks for your time. First question's on Germany. The commentary there clearly quite muted, despite the fact that the same-store sales growth printed positive through the course of the year. Drew, wondering what the catalyst would be, or catalysts plural, for the board and the management team to take a more positive view on growth prospects and capital deployment in Germany?
Sure. Thanks, James. Look, overall, we've certainly been pleased with Germany. I think when it comes to capital allocation, you know, we recognize that, you know, we've got to prove our case in Europe, and we do think that the performance of new builds that we've experienced in Netherlands has been stronger, and we believe the market is closer to scale. So that doesn't say we won't build in Germany. What we do want to do is focus our capital. We recognize that the market in Germany is a bit farther away from scale than Netherlands, so we want to be very selective. So it's nothing really around the recent performance. I think it's just more reflective of the historical performance and the strength of the business model favoring Netherlands a bit.
Thanks. And I think earlier you mentioned a same-store sales growth number for Europe ex the Damrak store. My line just cut out momentarily and I missed that number. If you could just repeat that.
Sure. So we're actually taking out that one restaurant from Netherlands. Actually takes it from a slight negative to a positive 4.6%. So to give you a sense, I mean, Damrak, you know, that's a store that was more than 60% down for the majority of the year. Obviously, that is a disproportionate impact, not only on same-store sales, but on EBITDA, as that had been one of our most profitable restaurants in the region and is now operating at a loss.
Yeah, and that was sort of my sort of leading question there, Drew. What was the store level margin, just roughly, for KFC Europe ex Damrak?
Margin in Netherlands. I don't think we split them out necessarily, but we're basically, you know, it's slightly positive. It's low single digit EBITDA.
Yeah, and I don't have that ex Damrak pre store margin to hand, James. But as you said.
Yeah, it's typically what we try to highlight and is always in mind for us is, you know, this is a market that historically has traded a double-digit EBITDA margin, and it's our imperative to try to return to those levels as quickly as we can.
Yeah, understood. Thanks. Last question. Nigel, could you give us a little bit of guidance in the year ahead around corporate costs, D&A and CapEx, please?
Yeah, sure. So D&A, I think, will be pretty close to 50 million. This year it's around 43. Capital in FY22 will be probably closer to 80 million. This year it's around 50. And then corporate costs, obviously you have to pull out Sizzler Asia, but I'm sure you'll have done that and you get to a number just north of 26 million. We'll probably expect that to go up, you know, in the order of 10 to 15%, but not in the order that it's gone up this year to prior year.
Okay, great. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. In the interest of time today, we ask that you please limit your questions to 2 per person. Your next question comes from Wilson Wong with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning. You've got Wassim Kisirwani from Jarden here. Can I just ask a question on the operating leverage in the Australian stores? Obviously, some good margins there, but just given the comp growth that you're seeing, are you expecting to be able to push those store level margins further, or is there a sort of natural limit at the store level, especially if you have a higher proportion of delivery? Just interested in how you see that leverage flowing as you push that same for sales per store number further north.
Yeah, thanks, Wassim. Yeah, look, you might have heard us say before, we really look for strong, stable margins is always our aspiration. You know, typically we've been, for KFC Australia, in the 16 to 17% margin range. Obviously, 17.9% reflects the strong flow through from same store sales growth. When we're getting numbers that high, you're going to see some flow through. Having said that, we would expect margins to moderate somewhat. Specifically, there are a few modest headwinds on margins to consider. Let me share a few specifics here. You know, from a wage and a cost of labor standpoint, you know, we had a bit of wage inflation on minimum wage. From it was up 1.75% in February. It's going to go another 2.5% in July. From a cost of sales perspective, as you're probably aware, you know, commodity prices have really skyrocketed. Importantly, unfortunately, we are locked in on chicken until August of 2022. But there are increases in areas like wheat, canola, and packaging, and they do impact us a bit. Beyond that, you know, we do have some investments in labor hours and technology, which impact us a bit on the OPEX level. And as a rule, we do try to keep menu pricing pretty conservative. So we do want to point that out, you know, what our aspirations are. We would say, you know, we don't typically give number estimates, but we would say that, you know, staying north of 17% is not an unrealistic aspiration. So that's how it sort of plays out in historical terms. So I hope that answers your question, Wassim.
No, it does. Thank you. And just a question on acquisitions, just interested in, you've obviously outlined in the Netherlands some smaller acquisitions, but just the availability or interest in making any larger acquisitions at this point, either offshore or domestically, if they're available?
Yeah, well, I think the way we look at acquisitions, we always have our eyes open for acquisitions. And using acquisitions to increase the leverage of our existing businesses is always our first priority. From an Australia perspective, obviously with the business performance, there's not that many franchisees that are looking to exit the business. So that's why we haven't had much activity on that front recently. We have, because of the weakness in Netherlands, seen opportunities there. And we think there may be some additional opportunity to come. All of that, you know, plays into our strategy of just getting additional scale in the market, getting more influence on our franchisor, and, you know, restoring the business to the profitability we've had.
Great. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Tim Plume with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Apologies about that before. Got hung up on, but most of my questions have been answered. I'll chuck in a couple of extras if that's all right. Firstly, just wanted to follow up on that comment, if that's all right, about Taco Bell down 14% in the first 7 weeks, which is when I came back onto the call. You noted Melbourne's been impacted. If we looked at the Queensland portfolio, how would that be tracking?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. It's good to hear you weren't on mute and that you had technical issues there. That would have been surprising. Taco Bell, look, Taco Bell, yeah, look, obviously minus 14 isn't a number we're excited about. I will say the number for Queensland is better, so that's more of a single digit, high single digit negative. The Melbourne stores are down over 25%, most of that impacted by the lockdown. So look, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't explain the number entirely. Nonetheless, we're very optimistic about the brand. We love the brand. We're quite positive in the calendar to come. We're starting this week with our Naked Chicken Taco, which is our best promotion that we've had last year. So we do expect those numbers to improve.
Great. And just quickly, are you able to remind us about the unit economics for the Taco Bell brand as you're thinking about it currently?
Yeah, the unit economics, I think we shared in the deck the, you know, that we're, the store level EBITDA is positive.
Yeah.
But we, look, it's right now in single digits. And again, you know, what we'd like to see is certainly get that to double digits as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so from a overall economics, we've obviously talked about capital being, you know, north of a million. That's probably trending towards a million. Sales sort of north of 40 grand, and then EBITDA margin of, you know, approaching double digits is kind of where the overall business model sits, Tim. Obviously, the results are, you know, slightly different to that, but from a business model perspective, that's broad brush where we are.
And so, sorry, just in a business as usual environment, how are you thinking about EBITDA margins?
Double digit towards low teens, but you know, over time as we get scale and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, look, just to build on that, Tim, I think it's, you know, obviously we have seen improvement, which is, you know, which is important for us. We'd like to see more improvement in the unit economics, but what we do recognize is we need scale to really get margins where they need to be. So obviously in a year like this where we're going to be building 9 to 12 stores, we're going to be taking on additional startup costs. So we're unlikely to see profitability this year. But once we do get to scale, we think that the economics should be pretty compelling.
Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you taking my calls and my questions.
Thanks, Tim.
Your next question comes from Louise Sandberg with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Two questions. Just firstly, you cut out for me on the trading update for KFC Australia. Remind me what that was for the first 6 to 7 weeks, and also what is it on a two-year basis, given the very strong performance in the first 7 weeks last year? And then second, also, on the competitive environment in Australia, with, you know, obviously the sector as a whole has shrunk, but a number of other strong brands like McDonald's, Craveable, Guzman are also announcing large sort of expansion plans. So how what are you expecting there? Are you taking share from smaller brands, or how do you maintain share growth when the other big brands are also growing aggressively?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Louise. So just to reiterate on the first 7 weeks trading for KFC Australia, we are up a plus 1.5%. On a two-year, that would put us north of 12, probably 13%. I think we announced an 11.4 in the first 6 weeks of last year. So again, you know, that's a compelling number, certainly on a two-year roll and in interesting circumstances. So when it comes to the broader market and competitors, look, we are, you know, as we shared from the deck, we are gaining market share. We expect that's coming from some of the smaller players, small chains and independents. So, you know, generally what we've seen is, yes, the larger chains like McDonald's, Domino's, as you say, Guzman, have announced good results. I think we all see opportunity in the market long term. Certainly the pillars of our strategy, delivery and digital, give us optimism and certainly fuel our optimism about developing additional stores. But overall, you know, you can certainly see that, you know, even though our competitors are doing a lot of promotions in the chicken category, KFC continues to perform well and strengthen.
Can I squeeze in just one more on alternative meats? Will you be,
sure.
Is there an outlook for that in Australia?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, it's one we actively discuss a lot internally. KFC has launched alternative meats, or excuse me, plant-based chicken in other markets. Mm-hmm. I think it's performed, it's sort of had mixed results, I guess we would say. I think the way we look at it is KFC globally is working with Beyond Meat on a product that we would expect at some point probably makes its way onto the menu. What I think is a critical consideration for us is just the quality and the taste of it. And we're determined that we don't want to launch a product until it really meets our taste standards and the standards of our customers. So if you've seen some of these plant-based products sort of come and go, we're determined that when we launch one for KFC, it's going to be a damn good product, and it's going to be one that we want to keep on the menu.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Elisa.
Your next question comes from Elijah Mayer with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Drew and Nigel. Thanks for the questions and congrats on the results. Just a couple from me. Maybe just touching back on the M&A front. I know we sort of touched on it briefly previously. Just how are you sort of looking at, I guess, the opportunities that are now available? You had sort of net new stores of 8 in Netherlands. I understand it's quite fragmented over there and a lot less sort of larger franchisees. So how are you sort of looking about that opportunity in the Netherlands or those existing regions?
Yeah, well, look, as you know, as we shared, I think we would be certainly interested in talking to any of the smaller franchisees in Netherlands. We do think there may be some additional opportunities out there in the market. So, yeah, we're certainly active. We love the opportunity to add on to our existing business. Anything that can give us additional scale for, you know, reasonable multiples, you know, especially ones that are margin accretive, we think this is the exact time to be doing that. And I think that the last year has certainly shown that to be the case. So we're certainly active on that front. I think in Germany, there may be opportunities available. I think we're probably a bit more muted, a little more selective. We do want to concentrate our efforts for now on Netherlands. And we're not looking to enter new markets at the moment.
Thanks for that. And then maybe just one more, I guess, on the digital side of things in KFC Australia. And just where you're at with, I guess, the rollout of delivery-enabled stores, is that at 202 at the moment, is that where you want it to be across the network, or do you expect more? And then just across the 3 delivery aggregators that you are now a part of, is there meant to be, or are you expecting incremental stores to be added to those aggregators as well, just seeing if there's more growth in the digital side in Australia to come?
Yeah, look, at 202 out of the 250, there may be a few, but when you bear in mind that a lot of the remaining assets tend to be food court, and a lot of those we don't do delivery out of just because it's difficult to expedite. We had forecast, we thought we could get up to 75% of the portfolio. We're now at 80% of the portfolio, so you'd be looking at relatively incremental gains to that. We're happy with the performance of the aggregators. DoorDash is the aggregator that we've been experimenting with this delivery as a service. So we're excited about where that's going. We love that as a strategic driver. We don't work with Uber Eats today. That's one aggregator we don't. I think that's one we continue to talk to, but nothing that we're certainly ready to share on that. So delivery, it's doubled sales in the last year. We think as more people shift to convenience channels, there's still going to be inherent growth in that. It's can't continue to grow at the exact same rate that we've been growing it until now. So it should level off a little bit.
Excellent. Thanks for the question.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Greg Smith with Fat Profits. Please go ahead.
Well, hi guys, and congratulations on the result. You just want to pick up something you talked about the last update, wasn't just in terms of the downward trend on, I suppose, lease rates, and given what's happening in the general retail environment, and I suppose the quality of sites. What sort of trends have you been seeing there? Are they favourable? And then the second question was, obviously, you've moderated the rollout plan in Europe to a certain extent and more focusing on the Netherlands. What would it take, do you think? You talked about the tourist, I suppose, numbers being down. What would that take to sort of repivot, or is it sort of a quarter-to-quarter process?
Yeah, so I think in terms of rents, we haven't seen too much move. I mean, look, it's been a very active environment in Australia. It's interesting. We actually sometimes have challenges getting contractors right now to build restaurants. It's such an active environment. So no, we don't anticipate any weakness or sluggishness in terms of rents. I think when it comes to Europe, your question was around
what would it take to accelerate in Europe?
Accelerating Europe. Yeah, look, I think when it comes to tourism, things like that, that would give us confidence in some of the inner city areas and places like Domrock. You know, we don't know when that's going to recover. We're optimistic by August things may be improving a little bit. I think that might temper in the short term our expectations around existing assets. It might allow us to find more opportunities in high streets in Netherlands. We've explored some opportunities there. There do tend to be a lot of restrictions around fast food in Netherlands in some of the metro areas. So this may give us a bit of an opportunity to build additional stores there. But our strategy for the long term continues to be on drive-throughs. So we want to be, we want to be very, very selective in terms of the restaurants we put on the ground. But we want to bring the brand to scale there.
Okay, thanks. And the drive-through format, something you would you'd sort of move towards in Australia more as well?
Well, we pretty much are. We're even more concentrated on drive-throughs in Australia. So the vast majority of our portfolio in Australia are drive-through restaurants. We only have, less than 40 of our restaurants don't have drive-through in Australia. So that'll continue to be our focus. I think in Australia, actually, we're experimenting a bit more with what we call a small box or delivery-based footprints. We're looking to open and test a few of those in the year to come. So, watch this space. It's an area as we look to increase the accessibility of the brand that we may find opportunity in some locations that until now we haven't been able to.
Okay. Thanks, Lynn.
Sure.
Your next question comes from Tim Bloom with UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Just one or two follow-ups if possible. In Yum Brands at their recent investor presentation, they were talking about a number of initiatives that they're going in to improve cost efficiencies, particularly around cost of goods sold for food, et cetera. Are there any things that you can share that are being rolled out in FY22 that should be able to help you on the margin side of things? Appreciate that you commented that margins are likely to come back a little bit in the Australian business.
You must be talking from a global perspective there, Tim. Am I getting that right?
Sorry.
Yum's comments, that? You're talking from a global perspective, not an Australian perspective, yeah?
Yeah, they were talking about initiatives and, I think they've made some acquisitions around software, et cetera, that should be helping from the cost perspective of food costs.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see too much direct impact from that in Australia. I think we've, a lot of the low-hanging fruit has been taken out. So there are some smaller initiatives that we've done around what we call vendor-managed inventory, where we look for the vendors to kind of, expedite and manage the inventory levels and ordering in our stores. We do think there's some opportunity around packaging. As we, just look for alternatives, we look for less expensive packaging and we look for more eco-friendly packaging. But generally speaking, we think on balance, we don't expect to see huge upside from a cost of sales perspective. I think the technology comment's interesting because, as you've probably seen in other businesses, the more we digitize the business, we do want to be cautious because there do tend to be licensing and operating costs that come in from that technology as you put more of that in your restaurants, front of house and back of house. So I think all of that would sort of temper any expectations we'd have around upside on a cost perspective.
Great. And just second one, I might have missed it earlier, but in terms of those digital menu boards, et cetera, are you able to talk to sort of any uplift in sales that you've seen across the part of the portfolio that has been rolled out against, and how do we think about the rest of the rollout?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit early for us to say that we see specific uplift from it. There has been some encouraging results as we've started experimenting with what we call day parting, which is where you put a different offering on the menu board at different times of the day, which digital menu boards allow us to do. So we go to a streamlined menu on a lunch occasion, for example, and it just makes ordering quicker and more targeted. So it's too early to say that there's a business case against that. We do expect to ramp up experimentation and innovation around digital menu boards in the future. But I think that the key benefit we're expecting at this point is just, you know, keeping the brand modern. You know, it's a more modern look for customers. They expect to see it these days, and we want to keep the brand contemporary. So that's about where we are right now on that platform.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. O'Malley for closing remarks.
Good. Thank you, Ashley. Well, listen, I just want to say probably in closing, appreciate everybody being on the call today. Thank you for listening. We certainly recognize that we're in a bit of a challenging circumstance right now across Australia with a new outbreak. So we certainly wish everybody, to stay safe under the conditions. And we were hoping to get down for an in-person roadshow this time around. Obviously, that's not going to be the case, but we certainly look forward to seeing everybody, or certainly a lot of you, in the next few days on the virtual roadshow. So with that, I'll close off. Thanks very much, and have a great day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.